I will be forever the method.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken to me.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. This week's show, we have some real legends with us. We've got four guests all at once. We've got Mr. Lee Haney, 8-time Mr. Olympia, Rich Gaspari, 1989 Arnold Classic champion, Lee Labrada, who was in the top four at the Mr. Olympia, I believe 7 years in a row, and Sean Ray, who was also an Arnold Classic champion in 1991 and was in the top five at the Mr. Olympia for 12 consecutive years. So we've got all these great legends joining us today. And the reason I got them all together was because Lee Labrada, Lee Haney, Rich Gaspari, and Sean Ray are all going to be part of the broadcast team at the Mr. Olympia this year. So if you watch the Mr. Olympia on pay-per-view, you're going to see all these great legends commenting on the Mr. Olympia contest this year. So Rich Gaspari will be commenting on the 212 division. Lee Labrada will be commenting on the Classic. And Lee Haney, of course, will be commenting on the Mr. Olympia. So it's going to be really exciting. So I thought it would be a great opportunity to get all these guys together and talk about their Mr. Olympia experiences and what inspired them to get into the sport and their experience of competing in their first Olympia. And we got a great, great conversation coming up. So you guys are really going to love this one. Rich Gaspari, Lee Haney, Lee Labrada, and Sean Ray all together here at the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Before we get to that, I wanted to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can just go to their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. They have offices all over the United States, but they can work with anybody in the continental United States just through their website. Tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they'll give you a free consultation. Plus, they'll give you 20% off your first order.
All right, and as I said, the Mr. Olympia is fast approaching. We got to show up a little bit late this week because we were not able to get everybody together until Tuesday. So you guys will probably be hearing this on Wednesday instead of Monday. But yeah, we got the Olympia coming up quick. Next weekend will be the Arnold Classic, which is unusual for this year. Usually that the Arnold Classic is in March, of course, in Columbus, Ohio. This year they had to push it back all the way to September 25th because of the problems with COVID, and they're not going to be having an expo. Because, of course, COVID is still rampant all around the country, especially in Ohio. And so they'll just be having the competition, but it's going to be a really, really good contest this year. So we'll be looking for that next week. Next week, we've got Jose Raymond coming back to the show. He was with us last year to offer his Olympia predictions, and that'll probably be a two-part interview, which will take us all the way up into the Mr. Olympia. And hopefully we can also interview Dan Solomon again this year. And Dan, of course, is the president of the Mr. Olympia contest, and they're going to be holding it for the second time this year in Orlando, Florida. And the dates of the Mr. Olympia this year will be starting on October 7th, which is a Thursday, and it'll be ending on October 10th. So it'll be that weekend in Orlando, Florida. And if you guys are in the Florida area or if you plan on traveling down here, I hope to see you guys there. I will be there all weekend doing backstage interviews again, which I'm very happy to be doing. I did it last year and it was fantastic. Had a great time. So see me at the show. Stop by and say hi. If you're not, be sure to watch it on pay-per-view and you guys can check me out doing the backstage interviews. All right. That's all we got going on this week. There's really nothing else happening. no news. At the end of our interview today, I'm going to read an article from the February 1989 issue of Flex Magazine. This was actually the same issue that I read last week when we had Janet Tech on the show. And this will be about the 1988 Mr. Olympia contest. And this was the Mr. Olympia report that was in this magazine. But the reason I wanted to pick this article was because all of our guests today were in this Mr. Olympia contest. This was Lee Haney's fifth Mr. Olympia win. Rich Gaspari was second for the third year in a row. Lee Labrada, I believe, was fourth that year behind Barry DeMay. And Sean Ray was competing in his very first Olympia. So this was one of the few Olympias, and we'll talk about it also in the interview. Sean Ray brings it up, where all four of these gentlemen competed in the Mr. Olympia together. So it's really, it was an historic event, I think, to get to talk to these guys. I was really, really excited. So I think you guys are really going to enjoy this interview. All right, so I'll be reading that article as soon as our interview is finished. So here we go with Lee Haney, Rich Gaspari, Lee Labrada, and Sean Ray. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and I have some real legends with me today. We've got the Mr. Olympia coming up in a couple of weeks, and all of these legends here are going to be commentating on the Mr. Olympia. So let me introduce each one of you guys. First, we got Sean Ray. Sean was top five in the Mr. Olympia 12 consecutive years in a row. And then we've got Lee Labrada. Lee was top four in the Mr. Olympia, let's see, seven consecutive Mr. Olympias in a row. And then we've got Rich Gaspari. Rich was runner-up at the Mr. Olympia three times, and he was also the first Arnold Classic winner. And finally, last but least, we've got Mr. Lee Haney, eight-time Mr. Olympia. So welcome to the show, guys. I'm glad you guys could all make it with your busy schedules.
Good to be here. Thank you. Thank you.
If the music man's ready, let's pose down, guys. You ready? No?
Hey, nobody wants to do this? You lift up that shirt first. You lift up that shirt.
Shirt's off.
I knew Lee would say that. He's been working for this day.
Sean, let me start with you. What inspired you to get all these former champions, former legends, back to the Mr. Olympia to commentate? I thought it was a great idea.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been doing this for a long time. I got started in 1983, and my first Olympia was in 1988. Of course, Lee was on his fourth victory there, and Labrada and Gaspari were already on the landscape. But I've been doing the commentating for many years. As a matter of fact, my final Olympia in 2001, I was the color commentator on Fox Sports Net, calling that Olympia as I was on my way out the door. But it's something I've always enjoyed doing in terms of commentating. And as things kind of progressed through AMI and into Jake Wood, I've always been of the opinion when I watch Monday Night Football, for example, if you watch even baseball, the guys that played the game are the ones that are most qualified to talk about what's happening to the person that doesn't know what they're looking at. You don't have to be Mr. Olympia to talk about it, but with the wealth of information that I gathered through this, being on the stage and not missing the Mr. Olympia since 1988, I've never missed an Olympia in person. Along with the 1989 Arnold Classic that Rich won, I've never missed an Arnold Classic, knock on wood, never been sick. But that shows you my passion for the game. Even though I'm not on the stage, I'm very passionate about watching it and enjoying it. And as we start to graduate further and further away from the stage, who better qualified than the great Lee Haney to talk about it? I remember he commentated one year. I've been trying to drag Lee into behind the microphone for many years because he's one of the most articulate bodybuilders and has a very artistic view of what people at home would be seeing. So having his voice is huge. And I grabbed Gaspari by the head, rubbed it like this, and I drug him in last year. And well, he did a phenomenal job commentating on the Mr. Olympia. So these are the people I came up admiring, respecting, and knowing that they're overqualified to talk about what we're seeing on that stage. So I wanted them to give back. Like I want to hear their points of views because they're all very different. We all come from different a background. You know, Rich is Cuban. I mean, Lee Labrada is Cuban, and Lee Haney's from the South out there in South Carolina and Georgia. And you got the Italian over there, Rich the Itch. Now we don't have to like. There's no testosterone involved here. We got experience. We're fathers and businessmen and entrepreneurs, but we're still fans. We've all got our own involvement in the sport, and I definitely want to hear their input coming into this year's Olympia.
Yeah, and speaking of fathers, Lee Labrada, you got your son Hunter coming into the Olympia for the second year in a row. What's that going to be like commentating and watching your son competing in the Mr. Olympia?
Well, fortunately, I'm going to be commentating on the classic physique.
Okay.
And so I'll be the guy jumping up and down in a seat on the first row. I look like a little kid fanboy, you know, but, no, it's just, it's really, surreal. It's almost like a second bite of the apple, you know, and, my gosh, I never thought in a million years that, that he'd be able to do that at that level, you know, but, hey, you know, kudos to him. He works extremely hard and is very focused, and he's earned his place.
Yeah. I still remember watching the Arnold Classic from 93 on TV, and your wife was holding, or I don't know if she was holding him, but he was in the side, he was in the background in the backstage area watching you pose. That was pretty cool. And now he's on stage. That's wild.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. I tease him that the first time he was ever on a IFBB pro stage was when he was about 5 months old. You know, when I won the IFBB Pro World Cup in Spain in 1992, we had Hunter along with us, and I brought him up on stage, and you know, we did the Lion King thing. it was a great photo op.
Yeah. Hey, Rich, we've got a lot of young guys going in the show this year. A lot of newcomers are coming in. A lot of people are talking about, like, Nick Walker. He's 26. But you were, like, 22, right, when you did your first Olympia in 1985?
Yeah, 1985, I was 22 years old, the first.
What was that like? I can't even imagine being that young and going in your first
Olympia. I mean, I think about it now, and it was just a phenomenal experience. But when you're in it, you're so focused just being in it. And, you know, I started as Lee Haney's training partner, you know, in 1984, and I learned all Lee's secrets, you know, I was able to use them.
Then he tried to kill me. He tried to take my life.
So now, you know, it was unbelievable because, you know, that 84, then when I trained with Lee, it was just a great experience. The knowledge he taught me, I still always appreciate what I learned. And then I had my own style of training that, you know, I ended up going into the Night of the Champions and coming second to Beckles, and then going in the Olympia and getting third on my first try was just unbelievable because I was 22 years old. I was on stage with, you know, my former training partner that I, you know, thought he was the best. And then guys like Tom Platz, Sergio Oliva.
Yeah.
These are all my heroes, Robbie Robinson. So it was just an unbelievable experience. I was this kid on stage, and I mean, Lee knows my personality is very competitive and very hungry. So yeah. I think about now, I said, wow, I was on stage with some of the greatest bodybuilders. But when I was in that focus, I was just like, I want to beat all these guys.
It was probably not till years later, right, Rich, that you were able to appreciate who you're up against.
I mean, it definitely, you think about it now, I appreciate all the years, the head to head with Lee Haney, the head to head with Lee Labrada. To me, it was a phenomenal experience that, you know, for what I was able to do. And it was just a great time in my life.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, Lee Haney, when you went to your first Olympia in 83, you were going up against some real old guard guys like, you know, Frank Zane, Muhammad McAway, Samir Banute. What was that like? Because, again, these were guys that you grew up reading in the magazine.
It was a similar feeling that Rich just expressed. Mm-hmm. You know, to be on the stage with Sergio Oliva, of course, you know, you didn't compete against Sergio. He's a myth.
Right. Yeah.
He's just there to do a guest posing appearance. That's what that was, you know. But it was truly an honor, and to have grown up and seeing these guys, you know, pictures all over my wall at home, and here I'm on the stage with them. It was like a dream come true. And, man, I cherish that more and more as I look back on it. So, wow, you know.
Yeah.
I got a taste of an era that few had a chance to experience. And Rich was one of those who sort of got a little taste of it also. Uh-huh. But I was a kid on the block. I never will forget meeting Albert at the IFBB World Championships. And, you know, of course, I was in the event. He was just a guest poser. And I laid down on the bench and did some warm ups on the bench press. And then Albert looked at me and said, "You put the oil on the bench, man." what are you going to say? Albert said, "You put the oil on the bench, man." Golly, you know, what did I do wrong?
Yeah.
You know,
That was a unique experience, man. But I would take nothing for it. It enriched me as a competitor and gave me a great appreciation for that opportunity of being able to just be on the stage with these legends.
Yeah. Hey, Sean, you came up a little bit after all these guys. How did you feel going in your first Olympia? Did you feel more like a fan, or were you ready to kill it like Rich was?
Yeah, I don't think the experience is any different during this era. I mean, we were all fans first.
Yeah.
He's talking about 1985. In 1985, I was over in Australia winning the Junior World Championships, and Albert Beckles was the guest poser. Just came off a second place behind Lee. Lee, you might know this better than me. What was Albert then? Was he like 56 years old? I mean,
yes.
This is 1985, right?
Yeah.
So I'm all the way over in Australia, and I get a chance to meet Albert Beckles, and I'm actually competing, and he's guest posing like he was for Lee. I didn't screw up. He didn't yell at me. But he was fresh off of getting second. So here I was in 85 having this opportunity to look at an Olympian up close and impersonal all the way on the other side of the world. And this guy, you know, he's old enough to be my dad, thinking, I'll never get there. Like, this guy's a million years away from my reality of what I thought I was physically capable of. And so the respect and the admiration for the longevity of Albert's career, not to mention he was standing next to Lee Haney only a couple of months before that at the Olympia, that fan type of a feeling, it never leaves you. I was a competitor too, but there's a lot of things that go on in your head when you're standing next to these guys. My first Olympia, it was Librata, it was Barry DeMay, and it was Lee Haney. And Gaspari in that final pose down at the 1980 Olympia. So naturally, I'm like literally backstage staring at the monitor like a kid at home, not realizing that this is the contest I was actually in. Like, I got a front row seat at, you know, the things I have at home in my magazine. So yeah, that fan feeling never leaves you. I'm 56 years old 2 days ago, and I still feel like, you know, here they are. There's Haney, the Gaspari, and Labrada. I'm like, these are my friends now, but it takes me back to a place where I still have their pictures on my wall. I can't believe it's kind of surreal that we've come this far, this many years. We're all healthy, and we're still in the game. So who would have thought that as a young kid coming up in bodybuilder that we would be here in this moment today?
You think it's different for the guys today, the younger guys who don't have the magazines? Like, we had the magazines, and I think when you see someone in person, after you read about them in the magazines, it's like seeing a movie star for the first time. These guys today, the kids today, the younger bodybuilders, they have the internet, so they're seeing these guys all the time. Do you think it's a different experience? Like last year, some of the newer guys, do you think they were blown away by seeing Phil Heath, by being on the stage with Phil Heath?
I'll let Labrada take that, because your son, what did your son say about getting, he beat Dexter Jackson last year, didn't he, Lee?
Well, yeah. You know, here's the thing, you know, I think the word beat is too strong, you know, mm-hmm. because when you're talking about a legend like Dexter Jackson, you know, Hunter felt incredibly honored just to stand next to him. In fact, he just basically leaned over and told him as much. And Dexter took him under his wing. I mean, they stood next to each other pretty much the whole show, you know, and they were talking, and Hunter was just so impressed with Dexter and just blown away by the just the privilege of being able to stand with these guys, all legends in their own right. You know, and I want to echo what everybody else has said. You know, it's like I'm looking at each one of you guys on the screen here, you know, and there's some fanboy in me. it's amazing how that part of you never goes away, because you love the sport. You recognize the impact, the indelible fingerprints that each one of you has had on the sport, you know.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Rich, you were a fan of the sport since you were like 14. What was the first Olympia that you remember, like, reading about in the magazines or actually seeing in person or on TV?
I mean, I started looking at magazines back in when Frank Zane was Mr. Olympia. So I remember the whole, you know, I guess it was 77, 78, 79.
Okay.
And when it was Zane and Robbie Robinson and Zane and Mike Mensur, I remember reading the magazines. That's when I was a big fan, reading the magazines and seeing, you know, a guy like Zane and say, can I, you know, would I ever be able to compete against these guys? For me, I was just this kid in New Jersey that, you know, just, you know, wanted to win the local show first.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And Lee Haney, you were at the 81 Olympia, right? Didn't I read somewhere you were up in the balcony watching the one that Franco won?
Yes. Man, that was the first one that I've seen up close and personal. I never will forget seeing Arnold walk down the aisle, and he had his plaid shirt on, his jeans. Man, he looked so cool. And there I was, along with some of my other gym rat buddies. You know, we had leased the van, and all of us rolled up together, slept on the floor in one room, one hotel room. Man, it was so cool. But that was very life-changing for me to actually get to see up close and personal Arnold and Franco on the stage competing along with Tom Platz. I think Robbie and Roy Callender was there. It was just absolutely mind. I think Dennis Tenorino. I mean, read and see these guys in the magazines, and you're looking at them in person, and it was just so inspiring. And to think that maybe one day I would be able to be on stage was just, it was just unimaginable. You know, it was just like being in a dreamland.
Yeah. Hey, Lee, I wanted to ask you, of course, about posing. It seems like I'm noticing some of the pros today, they seem to be taking more effort into their posing. Of course, your son Hunter is going to do a great job with his posing. I saw James Hollingshead hired a guy to help him with his posing. So where did you get the inspiration to get your posing from? I think all you guys were great posers in your day. I think you all did a fantastic job with that, and you were all inspirational. So where was your inspiration coming from, Lee?
The people that I looked up to back in the day as far as posers were Ed Corney. You guys will recall seeing the original Pumping Iron and watching him move on stage and gliding, you know, and I thought to myself, man, that's just poetry in motion. Yeah. And so he was one of the early influences. Another one that I thought was an exceptional poser just slightly before my era was Muhammad McAway. Mm-hmm. I really liked the posing that these guys did. And, I liked the idea of, being able to not only do the static poses, but to be able to go from pose to pose artistically, that whole statue in motion, approach to it. And, I want to just touch on something that you said, just a second ago about these guys today, that they're starting to take the posing more seriously. And I think that they are. And I think that there's been a bit of a renaissance with the emphasis on posing, especially in the classic physique category. And I think that some of that has bled over, and the open guys are realizing how much better they look, you know, when they move right, you know, in between poses, and how much more that they can engage the crowd and create that emotional bond with them when they're actually moving in an artistic fashion.
Yeah. What do you think they need to do more of as far as the posing? Anybody?
Practice.
Practice, yeah.
When I lived in California, you know, like I said, with Lee, we practiced hours, you know, just going through the movements. And the criticism I have on today's bodybuilders, and I know it's changing, is they just don't practice. Mm-hmm. They sit there and, you know, and I'm not going to mention IPB Pro goes, I go, so what's your routine? He goes, I'm just going to wing it. You're a pro and you're going to wing it?
Yeah.
I had to go against guys like Lee LeBron, and it mattered, like, with the posing. And I had to come up with routines because I knew he had a great routine. And it put more emphasis into trying to come up with your own style of posing to go against another guy that you know was going to kill it. So I just think that the new breed of bodybuilders, as Lee said, is they want to be able to emphasize showing up what they have. They get these great bodies, but they don't know how to display them. They don't know how to, you know, I watch Lee on, you know, Instagram. It's not just hitting the pose. It's the transition from pose to pose that they got to understand. And that takes practice.
Yeah. It seems like a lot of them practice the mandatories, but when it comes to the free posing, they don't put much into that, a lot of them.
And even the mandatories, it doesn't matter. It's flowing from the mandatories from pose to pose. You could just do it. Boom, boom. He looked like a robot, but you know, I mean, from Lee Haney to me to Lee Labrada, you know, and Sean, we all really looked at posing as being very important.
Yeah.
Part of, you know, your
and John, I want to say too, back, you know, our role models.
Yeah.
As Lita was saying, as Rich was saying, as is Sean, they were Frank Zane, they were Arnold, they were Robbie, they were the master poser, Ed Corny. I mean, Muhammad McCauley tore my butt up all over Europe. I mean, he was just a tiny guy. The man, he could transition. You never saw a weak spot in Muhammad because he transitioned so well. It was, as Lee said, it was like muscular ballet, so to speak. It was beautiful. And so that's where we got our emphasis from. Now you have this next generation whereby, you know, the judges wasn't really pushing a point system as far as posing in the last few years. But that has somewhat changed as Rich was saying with classic bodybuilding. Well, they say classic physique. It's really classic bodybuilding.
Yeah.
It's really who we are. And, you know, it makes a huge difference. We wanted to make sure we displayed on the highest level because there was a point system. Now you see some of the guys come out and they'll walk out on stage and they'll have you to do that. Come, you know, give regional people, the regional clap their hands, they'll clap.
Right.
And, you know, so that means you got to work and create a posing routine. I never will forget it. 1983, after my first Olympia, finished up. We were back at Albert Bucek's gym and the after party. And Arnold was one of the commentators there. And he came over while me and Shirley were sitting. He said, Lee, you look great there on stage. You got an incredible physique. He said, but Lee, you cannot take the same presentation that you won the IBB World Championship with and the NPC Nationals on a professional level competing against these legends. You have to do better with your posing. With that being said, he said, listen, when we get back to the U.S., because we were in Germany at the time, I want you to come to my office. I'm going to introduce you to my posing coach. She can help you with your transitions and movement. So be there, and I'll help you any way I can. And guess what? I had my butt there.
Yeah.
But, you know, so it made all the difference. It mattered to him, so I made sure that it mattered to me. And that's what we call the old school way of doing things, which made all the difference when we hit the stage.
Yeah, and I think people watch that because clearly if you were taking the time to do that, they had to take the time to up their game. And then it just kind of snowballs generationally. Like after you came, you know, Bob Paris and LeBron and came all these other athletes. We're looking at what other athletes are doing. So we see that everyone's paying attention to that. Now, I don't think the other athletes are really looking at the other athletes. And because there's no point system, because the posing isn't a part of the overall scoring, they figure, hey, I'll do what that guy did. Just play whatever. I mean, pose to house music. So they got to get back to that.
That's one thing that I want to just add real quick is, you know, I want to point out that I think that one of the reasons that these guys have gotten lazy on posing in the last few years is because they're not being scored on that the way that they were. So they think to themselves, it doesn't make a difference, you know? And so, you know, one of two things has to happen. You know, we have to bring back a posing round where they pick up a certain number of points on that presentation.
Yeah.
You know, irrelevant of what their body looks like, they're awarded some points for presentation, you know, that, or there has to be money involved as, you know, for a best poser award. You know, if you have, like what Arnold did, you know, at the last classic, you know, where you have $10,000 awarded to the best poser, some of these guys are going to start working on their routines.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And we've added that with the help of, my partner in Hawaii, Dr. Morales, who Lee, you know, very well. He's ponied up the best poser award to match what Arnold's doing for the bodybuilders for the classic physique. So this year, for the very first time, the classic physique competitors will be vying for a $10,000 best poser award. So these athletes that cannot win have an opportunity to win this award because you can be dead last. If you're on that stage and you put the effort into your posing routine, you can walk off with 10 grand. That's a pretty good incentive for anybody.
And the recognition.
and the recognition and the idea that you could be the first recipient of this award. Because look, Rich made a career off of winning the Arnold Classic. Forget about the three runner-ups. He was the first and the original Arnold Classic champion forever. So, like, with this type of an award being presented to the Classic Physique guys, it matters to them, and they're already elevating their game in the posing. It's going to make the bodybuilders have to pay attention even more to their posing routines, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what Rich said, too, makes a good point. You know, back then when you guys were all competing together, you knew, like Rich knew, Lee was going to do a great routine. Sean was going to do a great routine. So if you came out and did a lackluster routine, I mean, just a pride thing, right? You want to show your best.
Well, Lee Haney said something very funny. He was commentating, I believe, the Olympia one year, right? And this guy, Lee, you remember, this guy came out, and a big guy came out, and he's posing to, like, dramatic, hardcore music. And what did you say, Lee? Some guy came out, and he was posing like Twinkle Toes.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. Oh, that was so funny. I forget what year that was. That was a crack up. Because, you know, you can't take somebody that's 6'1". And go out and do a Muhammad McAway routine. It just doesn't look right for some guys. They're not built that way. Yeah. So if you're big like Lee Haney said in 91, it's going to take a Titan to beat a Titan, right? So you had Haney and Dorian, and that's exactly what it came down to, because the little guy wasn't going to take him out. I mean, but now when you look at the posing, these athletes have to pick the right kind of music that matches up with their body and with their personality. You can't just throw them out there and give them some ballet music and they got two left feet. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, Lee Haney, I did an interview with you the first time, and you were talking about that first Mr. Olympia victory in 1984, and you chose the music from Excalibur because you wanted to send that message that there's a new king and I'm going to come in and I'm going to dominate. I thought that was awesome because you were using the posing music to send a message to the crowd that this is the reign of a new champion right now.
Yeah, man, that was, I had a chance to go see the movie Excalibur. Mm-hmm. Man, I never will forget seeing King Arthur ride through on his horses, and, you know, there was a dread in the land, and all of a sudden as he's riding, everything started to flourish, the blooms and the buds, and life came back to the land. And that music was like, it gave me goosebumps when I heard it. So it not only touched my head, it also touched my spirit. And I wanted that same thing to be projected when I was on the stage. And apparently it did a good job.
It worked.
And being his training partner, I was there watching him practice.
Oh, yeah.
He told me, I'm going to use Excalibur. And, and that's another reason why, you know, I felt posing was so important, because he did. He went on that stage. He was the king, you know. Mm-hmm. And to me, it was like it mattered so much what the routine was and what it represented for you. So, you know, that's what I did when I started doing my own posing routines.
Yeah, Rich, you had your brother, right? Didn't he compose music?
One of the years in 87, my brother got so inspired by, you know, my passion that he wrote a song, It's My Destiny. And it was all about what I did as a, you know, as a bodybuilder. And it was pretty cool. So I used that song. They actually use it for the Olympia, you know, as the Olympia song for a couple of years.
That was a cool song. I remember that.
Yeah.
Hey, Lee. And I want to say, Lee, you know, I got the utmost respect for Hunter and so proud of him.
Thank you.
But, man, when he hit the stage, I said, that's Lee Labrador's boy right there. I said, because Lee didn't leave no stone unturned. He made sure when Hunter hit the stage, he displayed himself at his very best. And, man, I just want to just congratulate you on that. I was so proud to see that. It made me feel great to see a guy with that type of mass, that type of physique, displaying himself at his very best. So there you go, Lee.
I'm gonna let him know that you said that, because I'm literally 50 feet away from the gym that he's training in right now. We got a big gym here at headquarters. And I'm going to go out there and I'm going to say, hey, Lee Haney put you up there and said that you better do a darn good job, or else.
Well, I can tell you, you know, as a fan, it's not something you can just teach somebody, right? Being a professional bodybuilder, number one, you can show them, they got to still do the work. And do the work when other people aren't around, like, you know, cook the food, eat the food, get the rest, do the reps and all that other stuff. You can only do so much, but whatever influence you've had, because I know you're not in there lifting the kind of weights he's lifting. He has to lift. He's got to put that extra weight on there, right? So with all the tools that you have and all the stuff that you provided him, I mean, kudos to Hunter, because he's clearly used you as a role model and a guiding light, but he had to do the work. And that's very individual.
He's got to do the work, Sean, you know, and that's the thing that most people get that, you know, some people don't, you know, but he is literally OCD about training. This kid literally eats diet food year round. He just eats more of it. He reminds me of Rich Gaspari.
Yeah, I know how intense Rich used to be. You don't inherit that. You either have it.
Listen. When we were on that when we were on that Grand Prix circuit, I knew that Rich Gaspari was gonna stay on his diet, so I better stay on my diet. Otherwise, I was gonna get blown off that stage. You know, because again, it takes that kind of one mindedness. And listen, all of us got that, okay? Because we didn't get here by accident. Mm-hmm. You know, but you have to have that one mindedness. You know, and focus. You know, and because bodybuilding requires that at this level, you know?
Yeah. You know, there's only going to be one guy to win the Olympia, and you guys have done so many Olympias. Was there a point in your career when you were competing in the Olympia where you said, you know, it's not really about winning, it's just about being inspired and improving to be my best, you know, to try and outdo what I did before?
No. No. I knew Rich was that assassin. Lee LeBron was that assassin. And John Gray, he teased me and called me uncle, but I know he wanted to put my head on a platter.
I'll never forget.
I know they was trying to kill me.
I'll never forget in 89 in Rimini. You know, guys, I had been improving year, and I'll never forget backstage, and I'm walking past Lee, and he just kind of looks at me and goes, I got my eye on you, Labrada.
Is breakfast almost over?
15 minutes.
Give me 5 minutes. Sorry, guys. I'm over here. We're going to close down breakfast, and I'm not going to miss my breakfast doing this interview, but I will tell you this. Although Lee probably never experienced that, Lee, you got to hear it from somebody that did, and I know Labrada experienced it, and so did Rich. There's a mental transition that takes place on the hunt. I don't know. Lee, I thought you were at your best at your last Olympia. That's my personal opinion. You were barely 31 years old. I thought you looked your best that year. I don't know how everything worked in your universe, but as a fan, and I consider myself a qualified expert, I thought 1991, Lee, you hit your peak and you sailed off in the sunset. No one else has ever done that. I watched Barry Sanders do that, sail off at his peak. And everyone begged for him to come back because he still had gas in the tank. But for me, and I think Labrada and Gaspari experienced this, there was that moment of reckoning when we realized, okay, we've done all we can, and now let's figure out how to make this transition without getting hurt. And we recognize that it's too far out of reach. I mean, mind you, I'm looking at Ronnie Coleman saying it's too far out of reach. So another goat out there. No one was catching up to Ronnie Coleman in 2001, least of all me, although Jay Cutler arguably could have actually won that contest, depending on how you looked at it. But since I was in fourth place in that last Olympia, now I got Jay Cutler to deal with coming up in the horizon. I've transitioned. I knew then for me, like, it was over. The hunt was over. There was a lot of air out of the sail, and I'm in survival mode, and I need to make a transition. And something just clicked in my head that, look, that's it. They're too big. It's gone too far, and I need to find out something else to do. And luckily for me, I was able to stay close to my passion. But there is that moment of reckoning, and it happened for me literally following the press conference in 2001 where I went on to get fourth place. I was done at that moment mentally. It became a business for me at that point.
What do you think was your best Olympia? Now, years later, looking back, what was your favorite or your best Olympia? Anyone?
Go ahead. We'll go with the GOAT. Go ahead, Haney.
Well, like Sean was saying, 91, and I'll tell you what happened. I had a tendency, you know, because I always stay within striking distance, but I had the tendency the last 5 weeks I would go to a straight six training routine,
mm-hmm.
which ended up leaving me just a little bit soft and a little bit fatigued as I came closer to the contest. And only about 3 days before the show, after I feel out that my body start to sort of recover. But for the last Olympia, I stayed and prior to that six or straight six, 5 weeks out, I would use a three on off one. So the last Olympia, I stayed with the 3-on-off-1. I stayed full the entire time. The body looked healthy. The muscles were full. I wasn't fatigued. And guess what? Perfect peak. Just like Sean was saying, but, you know, I guess, you know, I had enough juice in the tank and enough of all the other things needed to win to keep me afloat and winning during those other deals. But that last one, I agree, Sean, that was the best. For some reason, it felt easier training for that particular show than the other ones because guess what? I wasn't overtraining.
Was that your favorite personal experience, Lee, winning that last one in 91? Was that better than 84?
Listen, man. Well, 84 was like a dream come true.
Yeah.
91 was like waiting to exhale.
Mission accomplished.
Man, listen, I had all these cats try to kill me, as I said. So that was it for me. People said, well, Lee, you didn't announce your retirement. I didn't have to. I knew that was it.
Yeah.
You know, and I was able to move on, was ready to move on and use my success in other deals. So it was it was no wanting to come back, man. I was finished. That was it. I was shocked. I had nothing else left to give.
That's a great way to go. That was a great way to go out. I mean, being a fan of the sport, I watched a lot of careers come and go. I don't think anyone had a better send off than that.
Yeah. Hey, Rich, how about you? You got second 3 years in a row. Was any one of those particularly the most important or the one that meant the most to you?
I think 88 was probably like my best year. As Sean was saying, you know, when I was biting at Lee's heels from 85, 86, 87, I kept trying to like beat him. I decided when I went into 88, I was just going to go in the best shape that I could be in to go on that show, and the winner, you know, the winner takes all, whoever's going to win. And I went into that show. It was a great experience. You know, I came in, I still was able to keep second. Mm-hmm. And only, you know, Lee talks about all these assassins. Well, I was the guy second with all the other guys behind, like Lee Labrada and Barry DeMay, all wanting to beat me to get into that second place spot. So I did that. And then going to those Grand Prix and then winning the, you know, the Arnold. So that period, and then, unfortunately, I got injured, and things started going downhill from there. with my body, which just wasn't responding because you know I pushed my body to the limits to go against genetic freaks like Lee Labrada and Lee Haney. I really had to push my body to the limits to get it to look the way it did.
Yeah, it seemed like 88 was the year where a lot of guys just came into their best. They said, "Whatever happens, I'm just going to come in my absolute best." You know, Barry DeMay did it also. Lee Labrada did it also.
Mike Quinn too. Mike Quinn.
Yeah, Mike Quinn. Yeah.
Didn't have a pretty body, but he was in shape.
Yeah. That was a great Olympia. How about you, Lee?
John, I want to say that, you know, in my mindset was never to go on stage and beat anybody. That wasn't the mindset that I had. From day one, I said, listen, this bodybuilding is saying Arnold and Robbie, Zane, Platts, these are the kings of bodybuilding. Then I said to myself, what can I do to become a combination of all of these different people? Forget the legs of Platts. I love his presentation, you know. Arnold was weird, totally different. So I always each year tried to be better than the Lee Haney of the previous year. I never tried to compete against anyone. I just tried to look like what bodybuilding said it wanted to see and look like. Mm-hmm. And so when you see people like Lee Labrada, like Rich, you know, like Sean, we were the best of the best at what we were gifted with genetically. And through hard work and determination and having the scientific knowledge of nutrition, we could never compete against each other, really. It was all left up to the eye of the beholders, which were the judges. Mm-hmm. You can't do anything about that.
Yeah.
So you just have to bring the best you that you can bring with the best presentation. And hopefully the chips will fall where they may. And then at the end of the game, okay, how can I take all of this hard work and dedication and turn it into an economy? And I can say all of us speaking with you today, being able to take our fantasy of bodybuilding and our hard work and be able to forge a living with it.
Mm-hmm.
Amen.
Amen.
Yeah. It's crazy because I'm looking at the length of all of our careers, but there was only 2 years in our careers where we were all on the same stage. The 1988 Olympia in Los Angeles and the 1991 Olympia was the only two times that we were all on the same stage in our careers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in the 88 Olympia and the 91 are both historic, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, the 88 Olympia was just on another level because it was my first – I'm a rookie, and I'm up there with my idols for me personally. That was just Los Angeles, the Olympia. It was just huge. I remember all the stars that were in the house, Gregory Hines. Think about the personalities that were at that show watching us. So when we had the weigh-in,
yeah.
I remember when Gaspari weighed in, I go, he's too light. He's too small. Who were you, Rich? 207 pounds, 204 pounds that year?
Was like 208, 208.
Yeah, you were small. I just thought, because I remember you competed heavier, right? So,
yeah.
But then you showed off the conditioning. It was ridiculous. And then, of course, in 91, you know, I had won the Arnold Classic, and I thought it was just going to be me against Haney. And, of course, Dorian Yates upset the apricot there. And, of course, Lobato is still spoiling and killing me. But that was that. Those 2 years were stand out amongst all of my career with you guys on that stage during 1988 and 99. Great memories.
Yeah. Hey, Lee Lebrada, how about you? Which Olympia stands out for you? The one that was most special, the ones that you were in?
John, you know what? I'm gonna pick up where Lee Haney left off, and I'm gonna say that it's the journey, it's the path that makes all of us as champions. In other words, it's not, you know, a highlight of one particular year. Sure, I took second before, you know, I took some thirds, took some fourths, et cetera. You know, they all have their special moments and that type of thing. But I'm going to say it's the path that makes the champions. Mm-hmm. You know, and by the grace of God, we've been able to live out a dream. Each one of us have been able to live out a dream that many can only fantasize about. And then not only that, but to transition over and to be able to continue making a living, you know, from a sport that we love and we cherish and to stay involved in. So for me, it was really just about the just the multitude of the years. You know, the first one in 87 stands out to me only because I remember the auditorium in Sweden being so packed with people. Yeah. You know, and the lights so blinding that as I was stepping on stage, I could only see the silhouettes of the heads. Guys, you remember what that looked like back in the day. And the flash bulbs start going off because it wasn't digital photography back then. And I thought to myself, oh my God. And when I put that first foot on the stage, yeah. It's I am stepping on hallowed ground. This is the contest that Oliva competed in, that Schwarzenegger competed in, that Larry Scott competed in. You know, I'm sitting there looking around at guys that I'd only seen in magazines, and I thought to myself, oh my God, it's like, it's got to be the feeling that a football player gets going into the Super Bowl for the first time.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Amen.
So what do you guys feel about doing the commentary this year at the Olympia? That's got to be pretty exciting, huh?
That's going to be fun.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I'm like, as all these guys, I'm still a fan, you know, bodybuilding. It was really cool to do the open last year. And I know, Lee, you're going to enjoy doing the open. I'm doing the 212. And I know Lee's doing the classic. So, no, I enjoy seeing these guys the way I was a fan when I was a kid. And now I'm a fan as an older fan watching these guys.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
We still got that kid inside us, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope we don't get booted off, Sean, after we do the thing.
Hey, either your social media is going to go up or it's going to go down.
What is that guy doing? Look how close is that. He weighs 470 pounds. What is he doing? He can't do a leader by the pose. On a pose. What's the matter with it? He's not as pretty as Lee, you know?
So, yeah. Welcome to the jungle, man. They're either going to love you or they're going to hate you.
I love it, buddy. That's funny.
Are you guys looking forward to seeing any certain competitors this year?
I mean, yeah, I'm excited to actually see, you know, Lee's son.
Yeah.
Yeah. The next generation.
Yeah.
You know what's funny on that note, the you know, that next generation note, first time Hunter competed in the a pro show, I start getting texts from these guys. You know, I get texts from Flex Wheeler and from Kevin Leverone and from Sean, and you know, it's like I feel like he's the our kid. Like he's just the next generation.
Yeah.
From our time, you know. So
yeah, exciting times. Exciting. Yeah.
It's pretty exciting. Yeah.
Listen, this is the biggest Olympia. At the end of the day, we're coming out of a pandemic. We got to give props to Jake Wood, because anybody else, if this show was in anyone else's hands, it's not actually happening. So huge props to them. The prize money is actually going up this year. And of course, our boy Lee Haney's going to be recognized. Again, here he is getting another award, as if he doesn't have enough on his fireplace at home. But it's going to be an awesome weekend, man. So obviously, Dan Solomon running the show with Tamer El Gundy and the whole Olympia team giving us the platform to continue living out our childhood dream here. We know there's a lot of guys that aren't with us in the form of Joe Weider and Larry Scott and Ed Corney, and even current bodybuilders and guys we actually competed with. We're still living the dream. And hopefully the kids that are coming up are looking at the camaraderie that we have, the ability for us to give back in our own unique ways with the Lee Haney show and the Labrada show and the Gaspari Nutrition and the things that we're showing the youth. Hopefully the guys competing now are paying attention to what we're doing, so that when we're gone, this thing continues on. Because the dream of Joe and Ben, who would have ever thought that it would continue on this many years after? Ben Weider passed away in 08, Joe Weider took 2013, and here we are. Still living the dream that they created for us as kids. I mean, kids, yeah. You know, we're 50, 60. So I'm a grandfather. Lee, you're a grandfather. I mean, we're up there, and it's still going by the grace of God through Jake Wood and the people that he's put in place. And now we're all going to have this one voice, our own individual opinions. And then, of course, on Sunday, we can Monday morning quarterback on social media to see how many people like us or hate us.
Well, Sean, props to you for getting all these guys together. I think this is going to really be an exciting Olympia just for that fact alone. And I want to thank all you guys for joining us today. And I'm really excited to see you at the Olympia in a few weeks. And it was fantastic having all you guys here today. I know everybody's busy. So I thank all of you for taking the time out to do this. It was a real pleasure for me.
Thank you, John.
All right, boys. We'll see you in 1 month.
Thanks. Hey, love y'all, brothers, man. Love all y'all. Right.
Raider Nation, baby.
Love you guys.
Raider
Take care. Raider Nation.
All right.
Take care,
guys. All right. Take care, guys. Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you to Florida Alternative Medicine for promoting another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks again to all you generous Patreon donors who continue to support our show. If you guys are interested in being a Patreon donor yourself, you can just go to the bodybuildinglegendshow.com website. And in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the link to be a Patreon donor. I appreciate all you guys do every month. I really do. Okay, without any further ado, I do want to read this article. It came from the February 1989 issue of Flex Magazine. It is the 1988 Mr. Olympia Report, written by Julian Schmidt. And the title is No Comparison. That's why Big Lee's Mr. O again. Nothing should be left to an invaded people except for eyes for weeping, goes the Bismarckian moral of battle. And so began Lee Haney's limb meal destruction of the serried ranks of rumored Mr. Olympia contenders, and with them, their feeble wisp of purpose. While most men live in hope, bodybuilders today live in dreams that inevitably dash themselves to bits against the rocks of futility. Lee Haney has been wallowing in purple for 5 years now, and in the 1988 Mr. Olympia, the security of his sovereignty was driven deeper into the future, not because he was the best he's ever been, but precisely because of the opposite. Even down a few percentage points from last year in both weight and hardness, Haney still stood as a paragon of another dimension. In a reprise of his previous victory, he was called out for two comparisons, and that was that. This would be the third straight year he would sweep unanimous first place votes, leaving the differential between him and others so vast as to raise the question, why bother? And his contenders knew it. To a man, there were no illusions, but rather desperate and intimidated souls. In an effort to compensate for the redoubtable Haney, they came on stage fluffy from force mass, or dissipated from definition, or saltified from attitudes.
and all it did was accentuate the gap even more. But try they did. The regular army was there again. Gaspari, DeMay, Beckles, Robinson. Some better, some worse, while other superstars were conspicuous by their absence, Christian and Natashek. If their decision was the wisdom of experience, it was in stark contrast to the innocent sanguinity of this year's horde of rookies. This was the fabled new guard of the future, out to show the world that it would step aside for a superior generation. With one or two exceptions, however, they proved to be fast learners. Cocksure and swanking at the beginning of prejudging, they brought down the final curtain, heavily humbled and presumably wiser. As the best in the world, they still need some seasoning, but their contribution to bodybuilding's entertainment stock was invaluable. The slick, bold, creative presentation of these youngsters hint at how far the sport has reached beyond the grasp of their antecedents. Behind the magnificent styles of Lee Labrada, Bob Paris, and Phil Hill, bodybuilding is ever so close to challenging entrenched cultural events in terms of extravaganza. In fact, in a lineup of physiques that essentially appear the same to the layman's eye, presentations carry more significance than muscularity, as evidenced by post-show audience reaction. Phil Hill was ripped off. I like Bob Paris. I like Lee Labrada. Certainly the three are disparately entertaining, what with Labrada's fluid power, Paris's tortured angst, and Hill's substitutive acrobatics. Think back a few years ago when if you saw one, you saw them all. Now each competitor is a show in itself. In addition, this Wayne D'Amelia, Dave Zellon production, fortified by such high visibility sponsors as Multipower, Coppertone, Natural Source Products, Body Masters, Weeder, Elise, Everywhere USA, Muscle Dynamics, Gold's Gym, Strength Systems, Tough, Bud Light, Asfu Matar, and Eruption Productions, served up its own piece de resistance, taking advantage of the Hollywood ambience to salt the audience with celebrities such as Kim Basinger, Gregory Hines, the Jacksons, Reggie and Jermaine, Robert Blake, Chuck Norris, and even chivying Schwarzenegger and Ferrigno to make their token appearances. As if the spotlighting of these glitterati wasn't enough, Joe Piscopo and other stage acts broadened the appeal of the show all the more. It was absorbing entertainment, even though I was seated in the second row, which meant I missed much of the evening's drama because I couldn't see around Frank Zane's hair. In a clever coup of attention getting, there was also the teratoid curiosity of 6'8", 300-pound West German bodybuilder Ralph Mueller, whose every step toward the posing platform was both heard and felt throughout the Universal Amphitheater in perfect pounding beat to his posing music from Witschmart's 19th century Deutschland composers. In spite of his reputation as the nicest bodybuilder in the world, Mueller's mere physical presence sends a shudder through all who witness him. He finished dead last in the contest, but the sport needs Ralph Mueller to demonstrate the range of bodybuilding's draw. Put it all together, and hey, folks, we have ourselves a show, a bona fide peek through the window to a future where social events and streamlined shapes come together. But in the end, the latest trend towards shredded physiques and pretty symmetry had been grabbed by its scrawny neck and yanked to a stop. Bodybuilding, as proved by Haney, is still a muscle show, and the more muscle, the better. Christmas tree backs and cross-rations reached their peak of popularity at this Mr. O, but Haney was not a member of that in-crowd. However, when inhaled or flexed, flesh solidified and grew to frightening proportions. Man signifies superhuman status not by dieting down to a schematic of his somatic plumbing and wiring, but by becoming so enormous that he scares the hell out of everyone. Front to back, Haney is measured the old-fashioned way, in axe handles, and in width. Mike Quinn was the only man there who could stand by him. But where Haney stands alone is in his quality of muscle. He had no peers in rounded, full, deep, healthy contours, with separations emphasized by the balance of all body parts, even though he was not as sharp as last year. But such are the spoils of an incumbent Mr. Olympia. With only one contest to peak for each year, he can ease into that pre-contest mode, purring like a fat cat, while lesser competitors spend the year fighting the physical and psychological burden of the pro circuit just to keep themselves alive. After peaking several times a year, there's little wonder that his competitors bore the battle scars of their campaign. This year was especially obvious. Right down the line of Grand Prix stars, the story was being told on stage. Albert Beckles, Robbie Robinson, Brian Buchanan, Phil Hill, Sean Ray, Ron Love, Bob Parris, each one off his peak, some flat, some fat, all lacking the hungry muscularity they exhibited several other times during the year. The result was one of a scrambling of the odds so that predictable placings were thrown out the window. But that didn't mean Haney's plan was machine perfect, even though he says, I was more consistent this year in my training because I didn't do as much travel as I did before. I would stay home and watch Josh take his first steps. That made a big difference. However, I'm supposed to weigh 254 ripped. Instead, in this contest, I weighed 248 or 249. I screwed up. I think I lowered my weight too soon. You know how 2 weeks before the contest you become fidgety and you want to fix something that's not broke? It's a mindset that's not hard to understand. In his case, for Lee Haney, is the quintessential Mr. Fix-It. And this time he might simply have gotten carried away with the momentum. His entire Olympia reign has been one of not basking in glory, but to the contrary, a systematic eradication of his weak points. As Bill Reynolds explained, first they said he needed legs, so he showed up the next year with legs. Then they said he needed arms, so he showed up the next year with arms. Next they said he needed calves, so he showed up the following year with calves. When people talk, Haney listens. Not so with the early Richard the Proud Gaspari. He was the antithesis of Haney's fictile response. Offer him constrictive criticism and he would fight you to the death. But Gaspari matured quickly within the past year, and it paid off with more improvement than ever before, plus a record-setting third consecutive second-place finish. Rich is still convinced he can win. Comparing Haney with me, he says, is like comparing apples and oranges. I feel I really put everything together this year, and I was in the best shape I could be at this time. I feel good. I don't think anyone has ever come in second 3 years in a row, but I still feel in my heart that I'm going to get this Olympia one of these days. In 1987, he, of course, was the best of the rest, but a critical failure from his excess weight. While overtly defensive, he was also taking it to heart, and this year he came in a good 12 pounds less, shredded like Machaca and tapered like never before in his career, all of which allowed the patented Gaspari muscularity to hold off the remarkably improved Barry DeMay of Holland. DeMay was definitely a threat to Gaspari's position, and Rich displayed a champion's magnanimity in his assessment. Barry was in the best shape I've ever seen him. I was helping him out the whole while he was here in California. And with DeMay, he's such a nice guy that when I compete against him, there's no way I can feel animosity. It's great. I'm glad he did so well. Indeed, he did. In fact, his improved placing from sixth in 1987 to third this time didn't come close to reflecting the improvement in his physique. Last year, he was so smooth as to be accused of squandered potential. But this time he appeared as if having been hewed from an oak. It was a new DeMay, cut deep and hard with the long lines that so pleased the aesthetic instincts of judges and spectators. Now that he has his timing under control, how much size he can add to his upper body will be the factor that could derail historical forces. I was about 15 pounds lighter this year than last year, Barry admits, so I know how to do it. Although I still have to do 7 Grand Prix in 1989. But something in his style says he's up to it. He has too much charisma not to. On stage, he is slick, confident, and a natural at projecting enjoyment in his craft. He has sophistication and taste with masculinity. And the harder he bears down to flex, the more beatific his smile. To all you beginning bodybuilders out there, study Barry DeMay very closely whenever you have a chance. Lee Labrada, fourth, dropped a position from last year, but still looked better, having brought up his back considerably. It's human not to feel so good about dropping a place, he says, but I look past that. It's just another step in a long career, and I know I'm going to get better and better and eventually end up on top. For this Olympia, Labrada strengthened his resolve, and he came out with even more muscularity and separation, his forte. Next year, I'm going on a very intensive mass gaining program, which for me would be 4 pounds, and simply concentrate on adding more to a good thing. Labrada, too, admits that DeMay was slightly improved over last year, and the judges always look for improvement. I think he deserved his placing, but there will be another time. Words to heed. 4 pounds on Labrada could make more difference than you know. The dark horse in the show was Gary Stridham, one of 2 rookies to break the top 6. He was exceptional, even though frightfully drawn. Nonetheless, his heavy deltoids and good arms and legs carried him to 5th place. What a shame his back is non-existent. It's the only body part missing on an otherwise Olympia-caliber physique. Gary has yet to begin to reach his potential. That may provide him with the motivation. It was a conscious decision to come in more muscular for this, says Gary. I didn't want to come in even slightly off, but I was very nervous and I had to sacrifice some mass for the cuts here. Gary's been training for only 6 years, and as he points out, it's the same with Lee Haney when he first started winning. He needed to make some improvements, and he did. As good as Stride and Ross, reliable authorities still believe the other rookie, sixth place Mike Quinn, should have finished ahead of Stride. It didn't matter to Mike. He was elated for days afterwards just to have been a finalist. I beat the critics was what mattered to him. They didn't even have me in the top 10, probably because my last two showings I came in too heavy, so they expected me to be a bloated pig again. But that gave me motivation. After all, this is the Mr. Olympia. I had been competing too much, but for this, I said I'm going to do my best. I was very happy with sixth. With each round, Quinn improved, as well as during each round, until he was gradually climbing the ladder in comparisons as prejudging progressed. His first call-out wasn't until the 11th comparison, but from that moment on, he hardly left the stage. Quinn entered the Olympia with objectivity, and in spite of his finalist position, he emerged with objectivity. I have to get better, he admits. I need more density in my legs. A healthy attitude. And if he can implement it as Haney has, Quinn can be Mr. Olympia. His upper body is already amazing. He grows like a mushroom. Plus, he's shown his ability to respond from a predicted no-show 4 weeks out to a veritable star at the moment of truth. If he is as willing and able to learn as he demonstrated here, we might just be in for the Quinn era. Mike even held his own with Brian Buchanan's fabled upper body, in fact, relegating Butch to 7. To be fair, Buchanan wasn't up to his condition earlier in the year when he was creating such a sensation with second place finishes to Mike Christian in pro shows. But that's no excuse. Quinn was there too and in much worse condition. Not to deny Buchanan his unique shape and size, but this is, after all, the Olympia. And in the comparisons, the competition Buchanan faced was pretty heady stuff. But what a bodybuilder. His proportions and legendary wasp waist are a caricature of the ideal most bodybuilders will never see. Yet he was smooth this time, a damn shame. Sameer Banu, the 1983 Mr. Olympia, finally tried his comeback after a 4-year absence and finished 8th. He was smooth and he could have used more density, bemusing many by finishing ahead of Robbie Robinson, Ed Kowak, and Phil Hill. But his balanced size and great back carried him, all of which attest to his innate ability. Obviously, the foundation he built in his Halicon days remains, so does the Panjandrum. Ron Love, 9th, was also hit by that pandemic smooth disease that swept through so many of this year's competitors. A shame, because Love had heeded the criticism he's received over the years, and he brought up his legs. Had he been in shape, he might have rearranged the order several positions toward the top. The biggest surprise of the contest was Bob Paris's 10th placing. Mr. Symmetry, who takes such vaulting pride in shreds, lines, and peaking properly at all times, was as far off the mark as Love. His classic quality was there, but indistinct. Paris is sensational in his presentation, which must have carried considerable clout in the voting total, but he needs more torso development to be a threat. Bob, too, is a comeback story, and as such, he seems to have succeeded better than Sameer. Now, will he cling to his fey idolatry of symmetry and go no further, or will he cultivate his superior potential by packing on the mass of which he is so capable and win the Olympia? Top honors for the best out of nowhere go to Algeria's Mohamed Benaziza, who left everyone buzzing afterward as to why he finished 11th. Benaziza had no flaws other than that he lacked the cadaverous shredding of high finishers. Still, he was a miniature Haney, massive, deep, and hard with no missing body parts. Maybe it's the handicap of being unknown. Sometimes it takes a year or two for a fine new talent to sink in. With his unsolicited support from so many spectators and his excellent muscularity, Benaziza will have a stronger presence next year. Even though he can manage no better than 12, Phil's Hill's name is here to stay. He stole the show. If a vote had been taken by popularity rather than electoral college, Hill would be our current Mr. Olympia. What more can you say about his size? Compound that with his dynamic routine, and you have a superstar of the highest order. However, enter the Olympia a heartbeat off, and you'll be pulverized. In the comparisons especially, it was obvious Hill was out of the big money.
He may have been shredding the wave of ecstasy he'd been riding since his first pro victory at the Night of the Champions 4 months earlier, but he wasn't shredding his body, and it cost him dearly. But not to worry, Phil will make loads of money the coming year from appearances alone. He's more than a bodybuilder. He's a consummate performer whose captation is easily inflamed by a cheering crowd. The judges couldn't convince him he'd lost, but the audience convinced him he'd won. Sean Ray, 13th, was the golden boy of bodybuilding after his national championship a year before, and his touting as a likely 1988 Mr. Olympia spread like wildfire. But midway through the year, it was doused by Hill's mass in spite of Sean's superior symmetry. So why did he play so low? Need we repeat the litany? Another off-peak casualty. Mike Ashley, on the other hand, was in very good shape, and in whispered clicks among press row was placed as high as 5th at the start of the prejudging. Maybe it's his size that pales on the Olympia stage. He finished 14th. Albert Beckles also endured a devastating Grand Prix circuit prior to the Olympia and paid the consequences with his 15th position, even though his legs are now the best they've ever been. Albert was aware of the Grand Prix pitfall, but there was little he could do to avoid it. Ideally, if one wants to win the Olympia, he had said only a couple of weeks before the show, he should not compete in this many shows during the year. The only thing wrong with Ed Kowak's physique is the prevailing aesthetic. Someone should make up our collective mind. Kowak's eye-popping muscularity should be bodybuilding's metonymy. His layers upon layers of solid, twisted mass have lives of their own. From front to back, there is no one in the sport proportionally thicker, and his traps must provide him with a constant headache. But evidently, in these designer days, it's possible to be too muscular, for if anyone personifies that, Kowak does, especially around his powerful waist. It probably destroys that precious symmetry. He finished 16th. And on down the line, the surprises continue. Robbie Robinson, the star of the Grand Prix circuit earlier in the year and winner of the Niagara Falls show in May, 17th. The reason? Not as hard as usual. Peter Hensel, getting bigger every year, but smooth, 18th. Louis Freitas, excellent legs and calves, but far from Olympia caliber in his upper body, 19th. Ralph Mueller, deep abs. The sweatsuits by most of the competitors wouldn't fit his calves. Legs taller and bigger than the entire bodies of the previous 10 finishers. Smooth, 20th. But it's all academic anyway, because there were two contests here. A, Haney. B, the rest. Who will beat him? Ha! The moment someone begins closing the gap, Haney can widen it or will. But can his will endure? What about all that talk of Haney losing interest and retiring next year, or after he breaks Arnold's record? Haney's response, I'm going to compete again next year. I love Italy, and I'm going to be there. Hear it. I have to take it year by year, but right now I'm still hungry and I want my place in history too. What am I going to do? Win one more and retire? That's ridiculous. I'll just keep going as long as I can keep giving it my all and go in there and do two comparisons and walk away with the title. It makes Bill Reynolds' analysis even more prophetic. After the Olympia 4 years ago, Reynolds told everyone that if Haney stayed motivated, he could win 10 in a row. This year, as if rhetorically confirming his prediction, Reynolds asked Lee Ferrigno if he saw anybody coming up who has a chance of beating Haney. Ferrigno shot back, nobody. All right. Great article by Julian Schmidt, who always uses those big words. And that was about the 1988 Mr. Olympia contest, won again by Lee Haney and also featuring Rich Gaspari, Lee Labrada, and Sean Ray, who were our guests today. So hope you guys enjoyed that interview. I loved it. It was, felt like a little kid interviewing all my idols from the 1980s. It was great. All right. That's it for the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Join us next week when we'll have part one of our interview with Jose Raymond, where we'll offer our predictions for the 2021 Mr. Olympia. Until then, stay safe out there, guys. Train hard, enjoy your workouts, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.